The Geek Cave, brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today. Gamefly, video games delivered. And GameStop, power to the players. Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to another exciting edition of the DT Podcast movie segment. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad, and we are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today, GameStop, power to the players, and Gamefly, video games delivered.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't have the copyright.
Yeah. Justin.
Justin.
Gamefly, you don't need pants.
Woo.
Copyright Justin White.
And while we're there, let's talk about Paul McCartney.
Yeah, so
because if Justin were in the presence of Paul McCartney, he wouldn't be wearing pants then either.
I took him to a Paul McCartney concert, and I'm surprised they stayed on.
Well, I wasn't close enough. There's that restraining order.
That's true.
Speaking of Paul McCartney, he is currently in the final stages of preparing his very first musical. I mean, the guy has been in the industry since the early 60s. He's done just about everything. I mean, he's even written kind of symphonic scores. Now he's taking a crack at musical theater. And what is his first foray into this going to be, you may ask? An adaptation of It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, why? Yeah.
Why? Because he's Sir Paul fucking McCartney.
There's
my
his
one.
Yeah.
That's why. Right now he's in the final stages of kind of composing the music. It is set to hit the stage in late 2020. That's pretty much all I know. I don't know why.
I'm excited for it.
I don't know why he chose that, but he did. There you go.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, the man's incredibly talented.
He is. Yeah. I don't doubt that.
So let's do it.
I don't deny that.
See it. Let's have more of it.
Live it.
So, all right. So a long time ago, back in the dark, dark days of the late 90s, there was a police procedural called Nash Bridges.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
It starred Don Johnson as the title detective and Cheech Marin as his partner.
Uh-huh.
Sure. Yep.
The show was stylish. It was light. It was a lot of fun and definitively a product of its time. I cannot stress that enough. It was the 90s version of Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Set it on a different side of the
which
country.
Miami's Vice was a product of its time.
Yes, absolutely.
Pretty much Don Johnson is a product of whatever time he's in.
Now, that product of its time bit is what worries me because there's a revival series coming with Don Johnson in title role.
Oh, my God.
That's why it's a revival, not a reboot.
Yes.
There's no word on the rest of the cast. The original creator is not involved. But if you want a taste of Miami Vice Lite, by all means, get ready for Nash Bridges 2, The Return of the Cuda.
You gotta admit, that was a sick car.
It was an excellent car. I've actually been trying to find it to be able to watch it again because it's one of those shows that you know the good guys are going to win. There's going to be quips, and very rarely does something bad happen. When it did, the show kind of went off the rails a little bit. It was better when things were just kind of funny.
My mom has the first season on DVD because it's Don Johnson.
Right.
So, you know, it's the same reason she has most of the Magnum PIs on DVD, because it's Tom Selleck.
Well, that makes sense. So
I'll see if I can yoink that from her.
So speaking of things coming back after radio dramas and miniseries and a movie, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is coming back, brought to you by Hulu and Carlton Cuse, who was the original showrunner of Nash Bridges.
It's all connected. Are we getting a cinematic universe here? It's all connected.
Wouldn't that be fun?
No.
Okay. Now,
that would not be fun.
All right.
I don't need Don Johnson in my Douglas Adams.
Fair enough.
So
it's not like Reese's. I don't need peanut butter in my chocolate. I don't need Don Johnson driving around a yellow Barracuda with my Marvin, the depressed android.
So in a way to make this just a little bit more, apparently this is not going to be a direct presentation of the script or the book or the stories, but a quote, modern update of the classic story, end quote. Whatever that means. I don't know. I honestly have no idea what that phrase means in the context of a science fiction fantasy comedy.
Justin's already moving.
Would you excuse me for just a second?
Yeah.
I was about to get up, but I think he's got this. Yep, there it goes.
Yep, there it was. Okay.
You know, we really should get the stream. We really should get the stream room more insulated.
We really should.
Yeah.
At least it would have helped if he'd shut the door.
Yeah. At least I didn't do it into the mic.
I appreciate
it. I had a one slight moment of lucidity.
That was professional. So, yeah.
I dig that. So speaking of, we'll just continue this reboot narrative. All right.
Okay.
With Nash Bridges and a revival.
All right.
Apparently, Look Who's Talking is about to get a reboot.
Oh, God.
With Jeremy Gerlich set to write and direct. Not so sure about this. You know, the original was kind of a unique thing.
Yeah.
And then they made two more.
Yeah.
And now I'm not so sure the timing's right, but let's be fair. The timing is never exactly right for children.
Who was asking for this?
Probably the guy who's writing and directing it, Jeremy Gerlich. This isn't a revival.
But he was probably the one who was asking for it.
Just
guys, we need to get this off
cinematic
my IMDb
masterpiece.
Page.
Cinematic masterpiece. Look Who's Talking.
Yeah.
Oh.
With Kirstie Alley and John Travolta, voiced by Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Now none of those people are attached.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
Okay. So over the past month or so, the FCC's had a rule change that allows children's educational program to start an hour early on network television. So instead of starting at 7, it can start at 6 o'clock.
Sure.
And it allows them to transfer some of their educational programming requirements. Like they're required to have so much, like 156 hours or something of educational programming that can be transferred, some of it to streaming services.
Yes.
So those kind of things. Now the stated purpose is to modernize the regulations, you know, of things. Now this is my opinion. So take that for what it is. Our sponsors do not have, they've got no bite in this. This is purely me.
Wait. The following statements do not reflect the opinions of our sponsors or the Geek Cave as a whole.
Is that what it's going to do is it's going to allow the networks to put their educational and children-friendly programming in places that nobody's watching TV. You know, so that there's more room for sports ball and such things. That's my hunch. Because just about everything the FCC's done since 1990 when the Child Television Act came out has been trying to walk back the Child Television Act or Children's Television Act, which said, hey, you got to have some stuff here for...
But we got to find room for 20 more hours of college basketball. And that takes place at college, which is educational.
The previous statement is not necessarily reflected by our sponsors or the Geek Cave as a whole. However, Justin does agree.
May cause swelling.
if you view less than 20 hours of educational television, please consult your doctor.
All right. So the guy who made the new It movies, and I didn't get his name, he's stretching into another horror property. We're going to get a Momo movie because that's a good idea.
You don't mean Ducky Momo, right?
I don't mean Ducky Momo. I mean that statue that turned into some weird viral sensation.
Yeah.
That then turned into a manufactured viral sensation that encouraged children to hurt themselves.
You know,
that's going to apparently be turned into a movie.
You know, I don't talk about my day job very often on the show.
I don't either.
Yeah, it's for good reason.
I don't know much about your day job.
That being said, the Momo thing was quite possibly one of the most annoyingly stupid things that my chosen industry has ever decided to push forward as something that is real.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my opinion, by the way, and does not reflect that of my employers or the DK podcast or our sponsors. It's freaking stupid, and you should be ashamed of yourselves. Continue.
I have written down, I don't have any more to say on the matter. I think that the Momo movie idea is dumb and should be avoided.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I do not talk about my day job very much.
Yeah.
And this has nothing to do with my day job. As a parent, I've had to address the Momo issue with my child.
Stupid fake news.
And it's just, you know, I expect there to be a little bit of, no, there's no monster in the closet. There's no boogeyman. And my son brought this to me, and I'm like, what the hell is a Momo? You know, my first thought was Ducky Momo from the Phineas and Ferb. Like, why are you scared of Ducky Momo?
Ducky Momo.
And then I looked it up. I'm like, the hell is this?
It's a hoax. It's not real.
And now we're going to make a movie out of it.
Yeah.
Yay! Anyway, on to better news. The ensemble poster for the new DuckTales was unveiled at San Diego Comic-Con.
This finally was
dear heavens.
This is amazing.
Some good news. Thank you, Chad.
As a child watching cartoons in the 90s, I think they have almost everyone now.
Yeah.
You know, at the rate they're going, I'm expecting the next season's going to have the Mighty Ducks showing up. And after that, the Gummy Bears, and then the Gargoyles are going to be in this mix.
Oh my God, please let that be true.
And then for some reason, Aladdin.
Oh, don't forget Bonkers.
And Bonkers, of course. Who else from Disney Afternoons could we?
When Bonkers shows up, you know they've hit their Cousin Ernie, whatever.
Yeah.
Oliver, Cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch phase. Yeah, you know, it's like,
we're jumping a shark
here.
That poster is just so much happiness.
It is concentrated joy.
I stared at my phone for a good 5 minutes just looking at that picture. I was zooming in. I was probably making an inaudible squeak.
There was two things that I had questions about. One, what's the deal with the watermelon?
Mm-hmm.
And two, where's Baloo? Because I saw Kit.
He's up in the upper right.
He's in the no, that was Kit on that board.
And I thought I saw Baloo.
There was Kit, and there
maybe he's flying the plane.
Yeah, he must be flying the plane, because there's Kit, and there was the little girl whose name escapes me from Tailspin.
Hmm.
And it's an adult Kit.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see Baloo, unless they've just kind of like, Kit's an adult, and he's the one in charge now, and all that stuff. I don't know, but like,
perhaps.
I loved the Rusty Rangers, especially because we've also talked on the website about the new Chip and Dale series.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, Disney, can I just ask you a question real quick? I know that like the reason that Mickey Mouse is not going to be in DuckTales, because Frank Angiones, one of the guys in charge of the show, he says that we wanted Mickey. They said no. They want to protect Mickey. Okay, so you've got these ugly as sin Mickey Mouse shorts, right? And then but you want to protect Mickey's image. But now you've got Chip and Dale coming, and it's also ugly as sin. And I don't know why this is a trend in animation. So I'm so happy that the Rescue Rangers, from what little we saw on the poster, actually looked like the god dang Rescue Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh.
I'm looking at it again right now. And you know, yeah, you're right. There's some interesting things going on. The watermelon, you know.
What is that?
I just assume that Bubba's Triceratops is why it's wearing a Donald hat, I don't know. Because he's clearly on the opposite side of the poster with the three caballeros.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the thing.
So, I mean, there's just a lot to process. Some of it, I'm a couple, you know, I'm behind in DuckTales, the relaunch.
Yeah.
But the bear with the wings.
I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah, I don't know what that is either.
Baloo.
It's Baloo.
Everybody got a redesign.
You can find it on DeepTeePodcast.com.
Yeah. But you're right. That does look like the daughter from Tailspin, and I'd say maybe they're just...
It looks like they've just aged them.
They aged mm-hmm. them, so maybe Baloo will show up as a supporting character for Kit.
I love that Goslin's...
Spin it!
Goslin's there, you know, mm-hmm. Darkwing and Goslin. It's just, yeah, now they have to do Dardwells now. Like Chad said, that's yep. got to be a thing.
We just got to keep on adding on.
Paging Grade Wiseman.
Yep. So the Arrowverse...
Gee, if only we had a way of contacting him.
He listens. He listens.
So the Arrowverse seems to be about to have the mother of all crossovers.
Yes.
With a version of Crisis on Infinite Earths. And how mother is this going to be? Well, so far, just in the cursory glance I got with not a lot of time, Brandon Routh is yep. going to be Superman.
And Adam. Yep.
And the guy who plays Superman on Supergirl is also going to be there.
Tyler Hoechlin.
And Burt Ward is showing up.
Holy crossover.
Yeah. Wait. And
Tom Welling is going to be
Tom
there.
Tom Welling
as
showing
Superman.
Up
as Superman.
Wow.
The Brandon Routh Superman is going to be Kingdom Come Superman, by the way.
Nice.
I have found this out at Comic Con. He unbuttoned his shirt and it's the Kingdom Come S that he was
the
wearing.
The fact that you know that
yes.
just impresses me more
yeah.
than that they're going with Kingdom Come Superman.
I'm so excited.
So
Linda Carter's attached to it.
Wow.
Yeah. She's been on Supergirl as the President of the United States, who is secretly an alien.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what her role is going to be, but just the fact that she's attached to it. It's Stephen Amell's last season as mm-hmm. the Green Arrow.
And they're promising a super happy ending.
Uh huh.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We got that in season 3.
He's
And
he's
then
going
you
to,
done mucked it up.
He's going to retire to an island.
I don't see why not. He goes back to that damn thing every year.
Well, you know, everyone's got a thing.
If we start getting too heavy, can we just go back and look at the DuckTales poster?
No, the crossovers have been surprisingly strong.
No, just the, we seem to have dropped again in our mood. Like if things start getting too heavy,
we were heavy at the beginning, so we can be light at the end.
Fair
just,
enough.
Just go watch Legends of Tomorrow. You'll feel better.
Yeah. So, in what is possibly the best news about the new Joaquin Phoenix Joker movie that's coming out, is the co-writer and director Todd Phillips has gone on record to say that they pulled nothing of the movie from the comics outside of the name Joker.
That worked out great for Catwoman, by the way.
I know that didn't work out for Catwoman, but for the Joker, the character of the Joker, it means that we can comfortably say this is not a canonical story. They're not trying to make the Red Hood story or the One Bad Day kind of story. They're just, okay, here is an option in the multiple choice test that is Joker's history. You know,
Here is a Joker,
and it seems that they're focusing more on the pre-Joker part. You know, what would make a person?
There are at least three from the comics. It's confirmed. There are at least three. So.
I'm not too happy with this generation's three Jokers being Joaquin Phoenix, whatever the guy's name,
Jared Leto,
and then whoever else they get up,
the guy from Gotham.
Yeah, I'm like, really? This is what we're going with? Okay.
Yeah, what we're going with.
Okay.
Yeah, but bear in mind that you grew up with three really great ones. You had Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
You had a
Jack
Heath Ledger.
And Jack
and
Nicholson.
And a Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't grow up with Heath Ledger.
You grew up with a Cesar
Romero.
Still three great.
A Michael.
Still three great.
A Mark Hamill and a Jack Nicholson, yeah.
So... You know, we're still okay. Things come in threes. You had three bad ones.
And then just Heath Ledger was just himself. And then, by himself.
Nothing
against Heath Ledger. I thought I had my misgivings when he was first announced.
Everyone
did. But I thought he did a great job at it. Just, I was already an adult when that came out. So I don't count that as growing up with him as my Joker.
Well, and Ledger has since become the... the go-to whenever someone's like, I don't know about this casting. Hey, Heath Ledger as Joker.
And I've gone on record as saying, you know, I had my doubts. I was wrong. I'm going to keep my mouth shut this time, see what happens.
Yeah. You're saying that, well, Robert Pattinson is Batman. I keep pointing back to like Heath
Ledger. I'm going to keep my mouth shut and see what happens. Yeah. Let us never speak of it again until it happens.
So, Chad, what else you got?
So, the next bit is Ray Harryhausen is considered a giant of filmmaking.
Okay.
You know, he was the pioneer behind the special effects of Jason and the Argonauts, you know, mm-hmm. the skeleton, the sword fightings in the original Clash of the Titans. The man created amazing effects on 16 different films that were made. A guy named John Walsh, who is on the board of trustees for the Ray and Diana Harryhausen Foundation, was wading through their archives. Now, this is the second largest animation film archives in the world. The largest is Disney. So
it gives you an idea.
We're talking huge. And he was going through their archives so he could start a book, you know, writing a book on Ray Harryhausen, and found sketches and treatments for 80 other films.
Holy
that this
cow.
Guy was working on sketching up and so forth. Some of these were so in depth that one of those movies, Force of the Trojans, is going to be made into a movie.
Yes.
It's like being planned to be made into a movie now. And the rest of other sketches and so forth, they're going to be compiled into a book.
Nice.
So if you are a fan of like special effects and, you know, the things that were happening there, those were translated into the special effects for, you know, the Godzilla movies later. And then later on into that, I mean, you can draw a direct line to Coraline and Paranorman with the stop motion, Kubo and the Two Strings, even into what we do with CGI, you know, the Incredible Hulk, you know, the Avengers movies and so forth. That's just one long through line. So if you want to see where that kind of stuff really began, this book coming out after we don't have a date for it right now on Ray Harryhausen is where you can really get a head start. That's neat to see.
Oh, absolutely.
That's neat stuff.
Absolutely.
So, She-Ra season 3 is either on its way. Well, it's probably out now.
I think
August 2nd.
Yeah.
It's out. And so the first season of She-Ra I thought was amazing. The second season, I was like, I think they're trying to build too much of what's going to happen, you know, which is, we're going to say that that's a temptation for most TV series.
Yeah.
You know, the same was true for Jessica Jones season 2 and for Daredevil season 2. It's just like, you know, we're pushing the story to get to season 3. Do a better job of that. And we haven't seen all of season 3 yet, but we have a new character for this series. Now, this character was in the original series. Huntara is coming out. Voiced by Gina Davis.
Hmm.
You know, the catcher from...
Yeah.
You know, and also the female lead from Earth Girls Are Easy. I'm just like...
And Beetlejuice.
And Beetlejuice. Yeah. I'm just like, huh, is this stunt casting? Because why would you have a particular, you know, live action, you know, actress who's got a career as a live action, you know, because they don't have a lot of other, we'll say Hollywood names.
Yeah.
As
well known names or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know why, but you know, Gina Davis is a talent. So
I mean, it could be stunt casting. I mean, but then again, I'm a huge fan of animation, especially the voiceover aspect of it. Sometimes a product will try and stunt cast. Well, we got this big name actor to come in, and it doesn't always work.
Mm-hmm.
And the producers and the voice directors, they know this.
Mm-hmm.
So I get the feeling that if she's confirmed to play this part in an ongoing series, she auditioned and nailed it. You know, because it is very hard to translate from acting in front of a camera to voice acting because you only have your voice to push what this character is supposed to be
feeling.
Your
physicality is probably used, but it's not the same as being filmed.
Yes. You can,
You're jumping around. You can jog in place to mimic your character. Yeah.
But I mean, what, you know, the point I'm getting is you can film me and say, okay, I need you to say this in a very sad way.
Mm-hmm.
And my expression will give you sad. You know, I'm sad.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just take, you know, if you just listen to just the audio of me physically acting, it's mm-hmm. not the same as me. Okay. I need to vocally act sad.
Right.
Yeah.
And so,
and that's a hard transition to make for a lot of, you know, mm-hmm. live action actors.
So I'm cautiously optimistic. The first two seasons, the second season wasn't bad. It just wasn't as good. And so let's hope. Be cautiously optimistic. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm good with being that. Zombieland 2, Double Tap, has a trailer released. You can see it on the newly redesigned geekcavepodcast.com. The characters are still the characters, and it looks like fun. I don't know if it's see it in the theater fun for me yet, but I do kind of like the image that they have of walking up to the, you know, overgrown White House and stepping in, and Woody Harrelson's character, you know, just sitting in the president, you know, president's seat in the Oval Office. Jesse Eisenberg, like, I'm not entirely comfortable with you sitting there. The humor seems to be intact, and I'm glad to see that. In terms of things coming that may or may not be a thing, Darren, I heard that there's some kind of bat-influenced news.
Oh my gosh, guys. Batman Beyond is coming out on Blu-ray.
Yes.
Okay.
Getting remastered and re-released this fall.
Yes.
If you haven't seen Batman Beyond, shame on you. It's really good.
Yes. For those who don't know, it is a direct sequel to Batman the Animated Series.
In fact, it kind of caps off the original DC Animated Universe.
Yes.
It starts with Batman the Animated Series, goes through Justice League and Unlimited and Superman. And it kind of chronologically caps it off. Well, the ending was essentially... spoiler alert for something that's been out for 20 years. Bruce Wayne is kind of sort of the father of Terry McGinnis. Clone. Without, but kind of clone.
Medical chicanery ensues.
Yeah. He wasn't really completely aware of it, but then he became aware of it and, you know, takes Terry in and trains him, blah, 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 blah. It's a great series. Go watch it. We might get a season 5. We might get a season 5. Bruce Tim said during a Q&A... for the Batman Beyond's 20th anniversary, which is this year, at San Diego Comic-Con, a fan asked, would we ever see a fifth season? Because remember, Young Justice came back, and by the way, Young Justice confirmed for a fourth season on DC,
nice.
On DC Universe, or
whatever
it'll be. If it's no longer around, HBO Now is what, like, a lot of DC Universe stuff has been moved to. Sorry, Swamp Thing. But would a fifth season ever be a thing? And he says, quote, if this thing sells like crazy on Blu-ray, that would make it possible.
Which I find funny because, okay, Young Justice, when it was re-upped,
yeah,
when it was brought back, there wasn't that long of a gap between when it was canceled and when it was brought back.
Right.
This is going on...
yeah, about 15 years.
Yeah. That's impressive.
Well, you know, DC has done a couple of, like, comic runs of Batman Beyond.
Oh, yes, and I've
read some
of them.
And those have been really popular.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
and I'm not naysaying a fifth season,
yeah.
But part of me is like, they wrapped it up kind of nicely.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Young Justice, when it was canceled after season 2, it was a cliffhanger. And then Greg Wiseman went around and said, you know, if there's enough interest, we might get a third season. And now Bruce Timm is saying the exact same thing.
Yeah. It just... to me, this is, I mean, like I said, I would love to see more of the stuff I loved as a kid.
Yeah.
But this seems more of a, I don't want to say money grab, because that's not the case.
It's possible.
It just, it feels a little bit forced, because like I said, Batman Beyond and the DC Animated Universe wrapped up very nicely.
Yeah.
Everything ended nice and tidy. And they went in and did more stuff with Batman Beyond the comics to kind of tie up a couple more loose ends here and there, and those were good. I just don't know if a fifth season is necessary.
Well, Tim also added that the series might have continued initially if Batman Beyond Return of the Joker had sold better. Now, keep in mind that film was heavily edited for American audiences. We wouldn't get the uncut version for a couple of years after that. And
yeah, the
it was much better.
Yeah, the uncut version is absolutely better.
It's kind of like the same slap job that happened to Daredevil with Ben Affleck, although that one still has a lot of problems. The director's cut is much better than the theatrical release. Same thing happened with Return of the Joker. Tim also went on to reveal that the episode epilogue, which is kind of like the finale of Justice League Unlimited and ties everything up, began life as a second Batman Beyond movie. And then it didn't sell well, and so they just decided to rework it, in which Selina Kyle would have been the main villain. Keep in mind, Batman Beyond takes place 30-plus years in the future.
Future, yeah.
Yeah. So...
yeah, she ages gracefully.
Yeah, apparently so. So, and Will Friedle, the voice actor... or is it Friedle?
Friedle.
Friedle. Who was voiced Terry McGinnis and Ron Stoppable. Has already voiced his interest multiple times in, you know, a storyline about this. So... and continuing this.
And I'm sure Kevin Conroy would have no
problem. Kevin Conroy would be fine with it, I would imagine. A pair of fans dressed as twin villains and granddaughters of Harley Quinn, Dee Dee,
yeah,
asked Bruce Timm, also at this panel, will we ever find out who the grandfather is? Because we know Grandma's Harley.
Yeah.
And Timm says, we'll have to think about that.
Yeah.
So I don't think they really know.
It doesn't necessarily have to be the Joker.
No. In fact, I think I would actually prefer if it wasn't.
Yeah, because, I mean, at the end of Return of the Joker, there's... I mean, it's...
Yeah,
it's,
Grandma Harley shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but, I mean, in Return of the Joker, it's kind of clear, you know, there may have been a parting of the ways at that point between Harley and Joker.
Yeah, it might have gone a little too far there, Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's all I've got other than, a look at Phase 4 and how Endgame is doing, which I assume we'll all get into.
Well, how did Endgame do?
It finally beat Avatar.
Did it?
Yeah, now I'm sure Disney doesn't care because they own both properties.
Yeah, Disney's just there like, yeah, keep watching it. Yeah, break that record.
Now, it took like a second re-release to theaters and then like a further push of like, by the way, we added new content. But yeah, finally it did it. Avengers Endgame officially became the biggest grossing movie ever in raw worldwide grosses, besting a 9.5-year record held by Avatar. Keep in mind, though, if you like adjust for inflation, Gone with the Wind still beats the shit out of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
This also, you know, would mark the first time since like 1997 that the top grossing movie is not directed by James Cameron.
Yes. Which, it's interestingly enough, maybe like, what was it like? Right before Endgame came out, James Cameron did an interview where he said that he hopes people had Marvel fatigue because we need to be telling different stories. I think you were nervous.
He shouldn't be, because Avatar 2 is coming out in like 2 years.
I don't care.
Yeah, you don't. But after the first one, the second one is another massive,
Who's Avatar 2 for? I'm sorry, but like...
People who liked Pocahontas 2, Return to the Old World.
Did anyone like Pocahontas 2, Return to the Old World?
There's a Pocahontas 2, Return to the Old World?
Oh, yeah, don't watch it.
I've not even seen the first one.
Don't watch it.
I was going to say, avoid the first one. It wasn't as good.
Lion
King. That was the superior movie to come out.
I mean, if you have to pick a Pocahontas film that horribly screws up everything the historical record has to say, then yeah, watch the first one. Two's bad. Like, how bad... what's a good like analog for bad? It's TMNT on the Wii bad.
Michael Jackson made a music video about it. It's bad.
Dunt, dunt, dunt.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So San Diego Comic Con happened.
It just took me a minute to process all that.
Like, and we talked about it in the comic segment. And a lot of things were announced. And I'm just going to list Marvel's next slate of movies and TV shows, and we'll do some minor commentary as we go.
Right? All right, all right.
So we are beginning with May 1st of 2020. So
2020.
So what's that? Not quite a year? 10 months?
Yeah.
From or so? Black Widow with Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow.
It's a prequel.
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
It's a...
Spoilers.
Clearly it's a prequel. Now, in terms of character Scarlett Johansson has said this will allow her to play this prequel character with a fully fleshed out kind of
Kind
of sense to her. She's played her in enough movies now that she actually has the character down.
There's no real sense of danger for the character, though.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no sense of danger, so there'll have to be some sense. There'll have to be somebody else that's in danger. We know she'll survive. Well, we assume she'll survive. Falcon and the Winter Soldier is coming to Disney Plus because, of course, it is.
See, I'm hoping that's more like a Perfect Strangers kind of scenario.
Well, why isn't it Captain America and Winter Soldier? I mean,
Don't be ridiculous.
The implication was that,
He was handed the shield, but he hasn't shown up as Captain America, so they still have to refer to him as Falcon so people know it's not Steve.
Fair enough.
I get where they're coming from.
Yeah.
I really do.
So that's
he was reluctant. Maybe he hasn't fully embraced it yet.
Yeah.
So that's fall 2020, and then November, so late fall, mid-fall 2020?
Mid-fall.
We get Eternals. I don't know what that is. I know nothing about it, which is fine because, like, I knew nothing about Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm making a note for a long box.
In the comics, there have been implications that the Eternals mucking about might have actually created mutants.
Okay.
I'm making a note for a long box.
Okay, thank you.
So 3 months after Eternals come Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, and this will begin the MCU's adherence to silly titles.
Yeah. I've already heard some complaints about people who are a little bit concerned about how Shang-Chi will be depicted, especially since in the comics it has not been the most sensitive approach.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A character who's been around for a long time isn't being treated fairly.
Okay, Captain Sarcasm, I was just saying.
Yeah. You're right. I'm just kind of... Yeah. WandaVision, which I'm pretty sure is something you'd see on a website of questionable quality, is a Disney Plus thing coming in 2021. Then also Loki, Disney Plus. A lot of Disney Plus stuff.
Yeah, they got to make you subscribe.
This Loki is supposedly the one who noped off at the end of...
Parallel dimension.
Whatever. Our second Strange title, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Coming May 7th, 2021.
Can you add some reverb to that in post?
I'll try to.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a bullshit title is what that is.
Yeah.
That's not real. That can't be real.
You're not real. You can't be real.
It's like Serpent Society. I don't buy it.
So, supposedly it will be the first horror, movie in the MCU. I'm fine with that.
New Mutants is never coming, so.
Disney Plus has another one then coming that summer of 2020 called What If? ?
I'm looking forward to that.
I have no idea what this is supposed to be.
Think Elseworlds.
Yeah, but with Marvel.
For Marvel, okay. Yeah.
There's some great stuff in What If. You can go down a rabbit hole. Like, what if Aunt May was bit by the spider?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those kinds of things.
Hawkeye. Ant. Hawkeye's getting a Disney Plus thing.
I hope it's Kate Bishop.
Yeah?
Yeah, I expect to see Jeremy Rayner in there, but it's more like guest starring kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And then the final announced was Thor, Love and Thunder. November 5th, 2021. Okay, so the poster for this, or at least the image that they show, looks like it's straight out of like a Sega Genesis title screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's a part of me that wants this entire movie to look like it was all, recorded on VHS with some faintly washed out colors, a couple of tracking lines kind of throughout, a little jagged. It won't be, and that's right and proper, but there's just a part of me.
Yeah.
Somebody did that to the Thor Ragnarok.
And it was great.
It was fun.
It was funny. It has Jane Foster returning and has, whether confirmed or not, I don't remember, as Thor.
Yeah, it's confirmed. She will be playing
Mighty Thor. So that bothers me not even a little bit.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
And I guess I did have one more thing that has to do with Disney. So Disney has started announcing its casting for The Little Mermaid. And they, you know, they named Ariel, which is a young singer named Halle Bailey.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
I always get mixed up when I like Halle Bailey. No, not Halle Berry.
Halle Bailey. And I want to say I'm excited that they are casting what looks to be a lot of singers.
Yeah.
In this. It reminds me a lot of the Cinderella with Brandy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, who's going to fit the best for the part here? You know, we need a good singer as the prince, or we need, you know, so let's get these characters. And it's like, who they got didn't seem to matter one whit, you know?
Right.
Okay, so, you know, this king and this queen should not be having this prince if we're going to be all strict biologically.
Yes.
And it didn't matter.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. And so I'm really thrilled that Disney seems to be leaning into that.
Terry Crews is petitioning to be
Terry
Poseidon.
Terry Crews wants to be
Triton.
Teen Triton, yeah. Do it.
Do it.
Do it, you cowards.
Let him play the flute.
Yes.
You know,
Terry says you can't go see that boy.
But it, with the number of things that we see about, and like with Shang-Chi, where people are like, how are they going to go about, you know, representing this? I'm glad that there's also this other movement that says, hey, let's.
Yeah, I mean, they're fish people. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get the best possible voices into these roles as we can.
It is a fictitious species. You can do whatever you want with it.
And if she can sing.
Yeah.
Which turns out she can. I made sure to listen. She doesn't sing music that I like, but she can sing.
She has the ability to.
Oh, she can sing. It's like, you know what? Yeah. Let's hear how she does it.
Yeah.
I'm digging it.
If you can act and you can sing and you're going to be in a musical. Good.
Yep.
I don't care.
So really positive development there to be able to see them lean into, let's get strong singers. Let's get strong actors. Maybe a few, you know, some unknowns. And I like unknowns in the Disney, like live action play things where you have maybe one or two well-knowns, but then the rest is just, cause that's like, you know, it was a star studded cast for the Cinderella musical way back, you know, Brandy and was it, Whitney Houston,
Whoopi Goldberg,
and
freaking Jason Alexander was in it.
This one we don't have too many of those big names just yet, but I imagine they'll have one or two to kind of anchor the cast, and then it'll move from there. You know, I have no idea who they'll get for Ursula, but that's a role that I would see.
I've heard Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy. Yeah, that'd be a good anchor. If she can sing, that would be a good anchor. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know about her musical talent, but I've heard her name thrown around a lot for that role.
It works for me. Yeah.
I've seen pictures online of Snoop Dogg wearing a flounder-like hat, and somebody just kind of photoshopped his head with the hat on onto Flounder's body and like make this happen. I'm like, yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Flounder doesn't sing, so he doesn't have to sing.
Neither does Snoop Dogg.
Well, I mean, rapping is its own art form. It is music, but it's not the same quality as musical theater singing.
It's a different style. Different beast.
But the character of Flounder doesn't sing. Mm-hmm. He's just there to talk. And I could believe Snoop Dogg is a flounder.
Yeah. Yep, I can dig that.
All right, cool.
So from there, Spider-Man: The Far From Home. You know, I liked it.
It's good. I thought it was good.
A good way to cap off season three. It does everything in its power to be its own movie until the credits.
Yeah.
And so we don't get a whole lot of, hey, look what we're going to do for phase four. It wasn't constantly opening doors to the next thing.
Right.
What it was it was shutting the previous doors and saying, okay, now we're closing this phase.
My biggest criticism of MCU Spider-Man has been it's mostly about Iron Man with a little bit of Spider-Man. So hopefully now we can actually tell full-on Spider-Man stories as opposed to like Iron Man's the best. Oh, by the way, Peter's here too.
That is a really good observation that I hadn't considered. I mean, I kind of knew it.
Yeah.
But I guess I was seeing it interpreted as Peter doesn't know who he wants to be.
Right.
and he doesn't know what he's going to be in. So
yeah, I get the emphasis, especially in Far From Home.
I think you're right.
Especially in Far From Home, I get the emphasis on Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, they to me just feel more like these are like diet Iron Man movies.
Mm-hmm. So by all means, you know, if it's still in the theaters by you, go ahead and see
Spider-Man. It's enjoyable. You should see it. Yeah, yeah, it's good.
You know, I think that Jake Gyllenhaal did a great job as Mysterio.
He did.
He was probably the most charismatic villain we've had since Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger.
Yeah.
You know, just in terms of somebody who's owning the scene,
right,
when he steps into it. And open the door just a little bit, even if it was just an act, to the multiverse, you know.
The multiverse of madness, if you will.
Possibly so. The Boys released on Amazon Prime on Friday, July 26th. So the conceit of this is that there are superheroes, lots and lots of superheroes, and all of them are assholes, apparently. And so there is a group that holds them accountable unofficially. I watched the first episode, and I don't know if I want to watch any more. It may eventually have something to say that's interesting or important, but it's also kind of grotesque, and every person in the first episode is just a little bit too much on the wrong side of slimy. So that's for that. So next, unless you guys have anything, is the random movie review. I know we've gone super long, so...
It's okay. We have a lot of ground to cover, so... Yep.
Let's hear it, Kent.
And now, it's time for Chad Savage's Random Movie Review.
Gentlemen, we have a unique occurrence this month. We have a movie that I don't have a single problem with.
Huh.
Not a one. Whoa. The dice dictated that I would watch a movie, and that movie was Bahubali, The Beginning, a Bollywood epic. And I'm going to try to explain this movie as best as I can. But know that there is no way I can describe this well enough to do it justice. I cannot do it. You have to see it. You have to see it.
Okay. It's on Netflix?
It's on Netflix. Okay. And so the film opens at night. There's a woman at the base of this huge waterfall, and she's carrying a baby in her arms. And as she kind of slips and falls down, we see an arrow sticking out of her back. And she sees a town in the distance. She starts kind of stumbling toward that. And then notices that she's being pursued by a couple soldiers. So she stops and retraces her steps backwards, the wet footsteps. And the soldiers get there and they look down. And all of a sudden, she just, like, with the arrow that she took out of her back, stabs one in the neck. As he falls, she takes the sword from his hand and then kills the other guy. And at that moment, I'm thinking, why isn't the movie about her? Because that's badass. Spoiler alert, the last like two-fifths and the first two-fifths of the next movie kind of are about her.
Okay.
Anyway, she's hurt. She knows she's dying. And she, you know, this magnificent beast of a woman holds the baby in her hand, like way above her head, and just starts walking into the water toward this village. And as the water's, you know, coming up to her chin, she's like, this baby must live, Shiva. And just the water goes over her and her dead body just keeps carrying this thing. The baby's rescued. And as they pull the baby from her hand, she like points up the waterfall and then is whisked away. You know, it's like, how? Because it's nighttime when she goes in the water and it's daytime when they pull her out. Or pull the baby out. But this baby, Mahendra Bahubali, must live. The baby's adopted and given the name Shivudu, or Shivu, is kind of how I'm going to say it because it doesn't roll off my tongue very well, Shivu. And Shivu is overcome with curiosity about what's at the top of the waterfall. And his mom says, demons and monsters. That's all that's up there. And if you go up there, they're going to eat you. And what's exactly the wrong thing to say to a kid who's curious is that there's demons and monsters. So now we get like a montage of him climbing and falling over and over again. Every time he falls, there's his mom like smacking him. Like, why are you doing? Why do you do this to me? Kind of thing. All in Telugu or Tamil. I don't remember which. And so After his latest failed attempt, he finds out his mother's trying to appeal to Shiva by pouring water over a shrine 1,000 times. And by doing this, she hopes that Shiva will stop her adopted son from trying to climb this waterfall. And despite trying to help or make things easier for her, the sage says, no, she's the one who's praying. She's the one's got to do the work. And so what he does is he basically picks up the giant stone, you know, shrine to Shiva and puts it under the waterfall. Shiva likes a shower.
All right.
And now he's got one. And whether this will answer his prayer or his mother's is uncertain. So the next plot development is that as he's doing this, a mask drops over the waterfall. And it just captures his imagination because who needs a mask? There's monsters and demons up there. What's this all about? And at the short-term result of him stopping from climbing the waterfall pleases his mother. She's like, Shiva's answered my prayers. And then he's looking at this mask and it's on the ground. He picks it up and it's because it's on sand, he sees the face that would have been under the mask because everybody knows that wooden masks are made to exactly mold to your face.
Sure, that's how that works.
And so then he draws hair and so forth and makes it into what looks like a woman. He's like, I'm going to go bone that. He doesn't say that, but that's kind of the impression we get. It's like,
it's heavily implied.
Yeah. He lusts in Indian. Lusts in Tamil. And so he finally climbs the waterfall in a music video.
It's Bollywood, so yeah.
And he gets to the top and he witnesses a battle between two groups. And one of those groups includes the face from inside the mask. And Shivu becomes even more smitten. We find out that the love interest is part of a rebel group that's trying to rescue their queen, Devasena, from captivity in the capital kingdom of Magismati. I know that's a lot of long words. Over the course of a couple days, Shivu woos the girl from the mask named Avantika, but who we'll call Eva. Because, again, the way he woos her is that while she's sleeping, you know, she's like sleeping next to the river with her hand in the water, he paints on her hand some flowers. And then later on, while she's trying to catch him, because who painted this on my hand? You know, she's up in a tree, you know, holding her bow and arrow while an attendant is pretending to be her sleeping with a hand in the water.
Oh, I'm going to show you for painting
while
on my hand.
While she's doing that, he's on the branch right above her and lets a snake down. So while she's focused on the snake, he paints on her shoulder. You know.
Step one.
Yes. And apparently that works because when the wooing is complete... You know, she's got a thing for him, and he's still got a thing for her. The flowers, by the way, compliment. So, like, when he goes and holds her hand, that makes one flower picture. And when they're dancing and shoulder to shoulder, it makes one picture. Because, well, why not?
Yeah, sure.
Clearly, they belong together.
That's how that works.
But she uses a flower, an opium flower, to kind of put him to sleep and to escape. In that escape, she's injured, and Shivu says... Well, then I'll take on your task of rescuing the queen, Queen Devasena. You know, I love you. I'm going to do it. This, by the way, is after they escape from an army on a tree, like tree bark, after creating an avalanche by pushing a rock that's roughly the size of 2 H1 Hummers welded together.
Okay.
It's a big set piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
The point, this is the point we discover that Devasena is actually Shivu's birth mother. She's been held captive for 25 years by the king of Magismati, Balaladeva, who we're going to call Bill. Shivu manages to rescue Devasena as they're escaping from the city. Bill's son, Badra, and we're going to call him Brad. So Bill's son, Brad, chases after them. And what follows is this wonderful chase and fight scene that has the chief slave and bodyguard, Katapa, which is easy to say, so we're just going to keep going with that. So Katapa, the bodyguard's trying to rescue Brad. Shivu's trying to kill Brad.
Brad's trying to escape because clearly this madman is capable of killing me. And it ends with Brad's head being removed from his shoulders. All right. Katapa has never failed in a mission. Like, this is kind of set up earlier in the film. And so he picks up a weapon and he advances on Shivu. And when he sees his face, he drops the weapon, bows down to the son of Devasena, who he calls Bahubali. All right. And this was the end of the movie, I thought. You know, because I knew there was a part two. So, all right. Now we know who he is. There's been, you know, conflict and resolution. There's another hour to this movie.
Oh, good Lord.
And I'm not going to go into it.
Okay.
The rest of the movie is a flashback to Shivu's father, played by the same actor.
Of course.
You know, from his birth to kind of his rise to prominence. All right. When I finished watching this, I watched the second one, which I'm not going to go into because the dice didn't tell me to do this. But it goes through the father's, basically his rise and fall, you know, his wooing of Devasena, his relationship with Katapa, his eventual death. After the death, we go back to the present. So we've got like an hour and a half movie, and then we have a 3-hour movie. Or 2-hour movie that's flashback, and then we have another like hour and a half movie that is back in the present time that concludes the story of needing to go and kill Bill. Not an Uma Thurma thing. It is superb.
Okay.
It is there is not a moment of these movies that I'm just like, you know, I don't know why I'm seeing this. Because every time that something's happening, I'm just like, yeah, that... okay. And I just have this big weird grin on my face because I'm like, this is awesome. Why isn't Hollywood doing this? Why? Because they can't do it as well as Bollywood.
All right.
Bollywood. The special effects are fun. The CGI is just awful. There are things animated in this movie that have no purpose for being animated. So I told you about Shivu picking up the shrine. He's wearing an armband on his bicep made of like rocks. And as he picks it up, like it stretches and then breaks. With a crayon, I could better animate. It's awesome. It's the most obvious and horrible use of CGI since the rat at the beginning of the Daredevil movie. All right. And even though that sounds like a criticism, it is not. It is not, because the movie is so damn charming and exciting. It's funny. It's dramatic. It's 5 hours long with both parts. I want you to watch this movie. I want you to watch its sequel. It is Bollywood at its finest. And while you may be confused at various points because names are really hard and places are kind of really hard, especially to Western ears, it's amazing and ridiculous and well worth 5 hours of my time. And I think it will be yours as well, if broken up a little bit. So be like me. So if there is nothing else, for Kent Harris, who put the bump in the bump ba bump ba bump, for Darren Wright, who put the ram in the ram-a-lama ding dong, for Justin White, who put the bop in the bop shoe bop shoe bop, I'm Chad Savage, who, you guessed it, put the dip in the dip da dip da dip. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.